Good morning, everybody. Well, we had a wonderful session, and a lot of presentations were there. Today, I'm going to present a part of the larger study that we are doing at the Fort Valley State University in Georgia. Originally, we started with the funding from USD and NEFA AFRI, and the challenge was to find out the alternatives for cellulosic biomass producing crops. And we actually started with the notion that can we work on carbon sequestration, like what is the potential, greenhouse gas mitigation, life cycle analysis, and economic impacts. But today, I'm going to be very focused on only the production part of two crops that I'm going to introduce and some take-home messages. So, it's quite well known that fossil fuel usage is one of the largest contributors to the climate change, and greenhouse gas emissions are very high from fossil fuel in the U.S. as well as on global level. I was looking at the recent statistics from the BP, and that's quite interesting. If you look at here, this is a reserve to production ratio. I mean, it's like conventional fuels are like 46 years, and 58 years for natural gas and 180 years for coal. So definitely we have a challenge to find out alternative source for fuel for our future. Now, earlier we mentioned like one of presenters, like, and I'm restating again here, like we were charged with like replacing 30% of the liquid fuel from fossils to renewable source by 2030. And a lot of us know very well that, you know, there's a challenge. Corn was a very good example as a food crop competing for the prime land. So definitely we need to find out a non-invasive which cannot compete for food and which cannot compete for the prime land. So for that reason, I'm going to introduce two crops that we worked on. I mean, there are several examples are there. One of them is elephant grass, which is a native of Africa, and it's non-invasive and a very low profile crop, low input. It's quite tolerant to drought, no need for too much irrigation. And in a separate experiment that we were doing, and I think I like the idea that we were talking about, one of the presenter mentioned integrating forage. And so when I was sitting here, I said, wow, I did not look into that part. So in a separate experiment, while I'm introducing the crop, what we did, you know, we tried to find out, like, can we get this biomass, how many times we can get? And to our it was really significant that you can cut in Georgia location three times a year. So while it's a potential lignocellulosic feedstock, it's a really good source for cellulosic ethanol as well. So I thought we can correlate there as well. On the other hand, we use energy cane, which is like bread for high fiber. Most of us know that, you know, sugar cane, sucrose, a lot of sugar, so it kind of hampers the yield and biomass. So for that, it was bread for high fiber, and we wanted to compare these two with different nitrogen inputs. So very brief objectives for today's presentation was to like look at the impact of the nitrogen inputs on the biomass yield of these perennial crops, as well as like what are the biomass yield potential on the marginal land that we have. So here we have our location in Fort Valley State University, and we use nature grass, energy cane, and we use three different no fertilizer, 100 kilograms and 200 kilograms of nitrogen. We use cover crop, and I had heard all of you discussion on changing the definitions of cover crop, but by the end of my presentation, I will definitely concur with our earlier presenter from Florida. Like, although it did not provide significant impact on the biomass yield, but it keeps the weeds off during the winter time. So still, I mean, my stats doesn't say that it is really significant impact on yield, but it really keeps off the weed. So Clover crop, clover, crimson clover we used, and it was a completely, a complete randomized block design with four applications, and I'm presenting data from 2011 to 2015. So this is how it looks like after 5 years, and a lot of efforts went into production, harvesting, soil cores, everything. From here onwards, I'm going to use these abbreviations, like T1 through T4 for energy cane, and T5 to T8 for Napier grass, and the treatments are like energy cane, no fertilizer, no cover, energy cane, clover, clover 100 kilograms, and clover 200 kilograms, and likewise for Napier grass. So not so many parameters I'm going to talk about here. We did took the plant height, tiller number, and for this presentation, I'm going to focus on only the growth parameters and the biomass yields. I thought I should also touch soil total nitrogen so as to correlate the impacts of the nitrogen inputs. So we did a baseline with 90 centimeters, and also it was really interesting. It's like hard pan where we are, where I have these crops, and for 2 years, I didn't see any change, actually. There's no significant change beyond 30 centimeter. And we had really hard time to, you know, put the hydraulic cores in the soil. So we decided, you know, we're going to stick to the 0 to 30 centimeter. And after 5 years, we're going to take another, you know, 90 centimeter or 120 centimeter to compare from the baseline. So and today I'm going to present only 0 to 30 centimeter. And dry matter yield, what we did was we harvested the entire middle row, and we kind of calculated the yield as a megagram per hectare. For analysis, we used multifactorial analysis, and we used R version 3. So let's go through some of the results that I have for you all. So if we are looking at the plant height, Napier grass was significantly maintaining higher plant height on an average. While if we compared the cover and control, we did not see any significant difference. And also, it was interesting to see there was not very much difference between the different inputs of the fertilizer and the plant height. Coming to tiller number, again, you can see there Napier grass maintained significantly higher tiller number in comparison to energy cane, and we did not see a significant difference when we were trying to look at the effect of cover crop or different nitrogen treatments on the tiller number. Okay, so that's interesting here, total nitrogen, and this is total soil nitrogen. I don't have data here for just the only soil total nitrogen. And our data suggested that there was no significant difference between the treatments. And right here in the treatments, this is T1 to T4 energy cane, T5 to T8 Napier grass. And what we found was there was no clear cut. As in the previous presenter, he was showing that I could not make a clear consensus what's going on. So there was no significant impact on the soil total nitrogen over 4 years. We did not see a significant change in there. Coming to dry matter yield of Napier grass and energy cane, you can see here the lower lines here going, they represent energy cane, and the top ones here are for the Napier grass. For the establishment year, the yield was quite low, and that is expected. So in 2011 and 2012, we had like lower yield, but as they progressed from 2015, they maintained a quite similar biomass yield, except in 2014, which we looked at it, and because of low precipitation that year in our area. And when we compare the average yield, dry matter yield, we found that Napier grass maintains significantly higher yield than energy cane, and an average is like 30 megagrams per hectare, while energy cane like 20 micrograms per hectare. We could not find any significant difference with the use of cover crop or different fertilizer rates. Comparing the correlation, we correlated the, and we found that heat, height and tiller numbers were really highly correlated with the yield, but there was very poor correlation with the soil total nitrogen. And previously I told you that we could not see any significant increase in the soil total nitrogen. So here we go, interactions and different variables. So if you look at it, only four parameters I'm talking about here, and the differences were with only crops. So we couldn't see any significant difference for the nitrogen treatments across the parameters. We could not see any significant difference across the cover crop, and the interaction of like crops and nitrogen, crops and cover crop, and nitrogen and cover crop, and interaction of all three of them. So that's a, I don't expect you to read all that. I just wanted to say that we could not see any difference with the different nitrogen input on the yield, height, or tillers and soil total nitrogen, and likewise with the cover crop on the yield. So that's why I was trying to go back to the notion that, hey, if there's no impact of the input of the fertilizer, but the plants are maintaining a decent biomass yield. So that's the concept, like low input production system. So, and I think that kind of made me to conclude that even though you are putting 200 kilograms of nitrogen is at par with the control, so there's no need for, you know, artificial nitrogen fertilization for these crops. So these four graphs here shows you average annual biomass yield, plant height, tiller number, and soil total nitrogen in Napier grass. And you can see here the same pattern. 2011, like establishment year. 2012, they're kind of getting there. And then 13, 14, 15, there's no significant difference except in 2014 where I told you the reason was low precipitation that year, particularly. And what is interesting here is I did not see a significant, I mean, we were expecting that clover could incorporate some nitrogen, but we didn't see that much. And likewise for the energy cane. So it maintained a quite constant biomass yield after, in the third year to the fifth year. So we're going to take another data set this year. The harvesting is done. We are calculating the yield, so it will be interesting to do that. And also, we are taking the soil cores up to 120 centimeter this time to compare with the baseline data. So, what we concluded, like you know, it's really energy cane and Napier grass can be grown on marginal lands, and comparing both of them, I think Napier grass is more favored at this time. But I don't want to do a bias. I had a chance to go to Sugarcane Breeding Research Institute, ARS Huma, I believe. Yeah, Louisiana. And I saw that, like, oh my God, the production potential of those different energy cane that they are breeding there, like 40 megagrams per hectare. I mean, they are not necessarily marginal land, but that changed my approach towards that, and I haven't written here, but what I'm thinking is maybe next step for me, if I have to continue this, is to do a varietal trial. I cannot just stay with one variety, you know, like, oh, this is good or this is bad. So I think another approach could be, you know, do a varietal trial on the same land or marginal land and to see if more production potential is there. And there are varieties, actually, they are producing. They are quite potent than Napier grass. If you look at the morphology, like, what? These are energy cane? No, they were energy cane. So, yeah, I think one of the other things that I realized that another approach could be next is to compare varieties in those environment. And also, it's a part of large study right now, so analysis of greenhouse gas emission data. We did actually take greenhouse gas emissions every day for 5 years. The data has been analyzed, and our graduate student, he's working on greenhouse gas modeling another collaborator at UGA, we are doing life cycle analysis and impact analysis. So upon completion of entire package, we will have a comprehensive picture of the suitability and adaptability of the cropping system. With that, I would like to thank all of you to stay here with the last presenter of the session. I really appreciate your time and patience. Thank you. And I would like to see if any questions are there. Yes, ma'am. Very good. That's a good question, actually. It was a fallow for last 15 years. So we did not expect it that much. And it was like hard pan and all that. So when you compare the baseline data, right, and then you compare like even after incorporation, we should have seen something, right? So that always was a question like, hey, so whatever, if it's an optimal and we are adding more, we should see the difference, right? So we did not see that. Yes. Oh, yes, sir. Right. Right.
And what happened to that across, because we are talking about marginal.
Sure. Yeah, I'm sorry, there's no chart here, but one final core has to be taken, but at the same time, we did not see any change. Whatever we had it, you can see the data. We have the data for all 5 years. Whatever the baseline was, we did not see any significant change from there. So my point was, okay, fine, even if it was optimal or if it was enough to support the growth, we are providing, like, we have cover crop, we have clover, we have 100 kilograms, we have 200 kilograms. At least they should have had some impact on the yield, but we did not see that. So, yeah, I should have included that chart here. Sorry about that. Yes, sir. Okay.
Okay, yeah.
I think you're right, yeah.
And I think that would be some really fruitful area of research to look at a more holistic nutrition than just nitrogen.
Definitely. And I think I kind of agree with you because we are having another challenge to explain our data on the carbon. We did not see any, significant changes in there. So definitely we should be, you know, focusing on some other issues rather than only nitrogen, and I kind of agree with you. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you see any changes or do you see any response in nitrogen across the year? So you have something the average over all your years.
Right.
Do you see any difference year one, year two, year three, or?
No, there was no significant difference.
During your growing system, do you have something date during your growing season for just one final 5 months?
No, final biomass. Yeah, I think that's another thing one can do is like based on their nutrient uptake. So time, that could be a good option. But it was a quite huge experiment, you know,
and
we could not incorporate so many things. And after end of so many years, you learn, you know, what are missing things. And I think that's the part of the research. At least, you know, we can put our recommendations and the researchers who are trying to pursue some research in that area, they can see the drawbacks and also the potential recommendations so that, we can come to a consensus. Yes, ma'am. Right, yeah, it was in the chart, but I did not mention. And I said, you know, I should have included that. No, not top of my head. Yes, sir.
Which
ID you use? It's HOC62 or something from Louisiana. Right. Right, right. And that was really a big surprise to me, because I had never been to a sugarcane breeding institute. And when I saw that facility, and I met Anna Hale, she is there. She is the pioneer there. So we looked at it, and she showed different varieties. And I looked at the trial there. And when I looked at the crop, standing crop, I said, are you serious? This is energy cane? So definitely, you know, I was like, I should have had at least two or three varieties to compare with. But it could be really logistically impossible to do that in what financial support I got, and, you know, so.
Yeah, but our yield is almost double than what we have.
Right, right. But if there is a trade-off. See, marginal land sitting there, you are growing nothing,
yeah.
Right? So if you have some crop which is growing there, and you are maintaining that land also, and I would have really impressed with the carbon data. I want to see how it goes, so we can at least have one more component to strengthen that notion that, hey, there's a lot of carbon sequestration too. So, but yeah, if the land is sitting there idle and you have a crop that you can grow and at least have minimum biomass yield, and I said if I use different variety, I am positive that we can have rather higher yield. But on the other hand, Napier grass seems to be really great, because they bred an energy cane to kind of widen the gap, because June and December, these are the two seasons for sugarcane, and the sugar mills were like sitting idle, so they wanted different crops. Like we were talking about biomass sorghum, right? We are talking about Napier grass. So this energy cane is kind of in the middle, like October, late October and November, you can harvest it. So if you look at the different benefits of it, it kind of gets in the picture. But yeah, of course, the varietal experiment will be a good idea on this marginal land.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you, and have a wonderful day. Thank you.